DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, let me make a deal with you off the top of the program here. If y'all will let me have fun for a couple of minutes, we'll get to some serious football talk coming up after that. I think you do have to drill down here on a pretty significant issue for Georgia heading towards Kentucky. We'll obviously do a lot of that here coming up in just a moment, but I do want to have a little more fun off the Florida win here before we get too deep into the real football stuff heading towards Kentucky on Saturday. I thought there was one aspect of the victory there in Jacksonville for me that was more enjoyable than any other. And we talked about this a little bit on our Northside Hospital postgame show on Saturday night. I had some fun with some of y'all on Twitter about this on Saturday as well. That is the fact that the win against Florida in a lot of ways was predicted and, dare I say, guaranteed by Georgia's quarterback Jake Fromm and safety Richard LeCount going back to 2017. Really, in the early stages of 2017, heading towards National Signing Day there in February, these two guys kind of predicted this with the Christmas commitments video. It was one of the – it was not the very first commitment video Dog Nation ever did, but it was among the first and still, I think, among the best that we've done in our time and being here. Many of you remember it was Malik Herring and J.J. Holloman. They committed to Georgia, but the theme of the video was that Richard LeCount and Jake Fromm are dressed up like Santa Claus. And it's a great storyline. It's a great video. And there's a punchline at the end of the video. Well, let me let you see it or hear it, depending on how you're accessing our program today. And this was foreshadowing for what happened in Jacksonville. I love this. I can't get tired of this. Here's a little more of LeCount and Fromm from the original Dog Nation Christmas Commitments video that actually predicted what we all got a chance to see on Saturday.
What's up, Malik? You asked for it, you got it.
I'm giving you just what you wanted.
But this time, this present doesn't come in orange.
Thanks, Santa. I'm gonna play with Savages, right?
Yeah, you can bet on that.
I got you, Santa.
What's up, man?
What's up, my dog?
All right, man, commit to the G.
Yeah, sick on 17. Santa brought my presents early.
All right, cool. I'm gonna call Kirby Mel, let him know what's up.
All right, I'm gonna call Coach Coley and Jeff at Dog Nation.
Commit to the G.
Hey, Richie, when do you think we need to let Malik and Jeremiah know what we did?
Probably sophomore year in Jacksonville.
After we beat Florida again.
How can you not love that there from those guys, Jake Fromm, Richard LeCount, dressing up like Santa Claus and then saying, when are we going to tell them it was us who was Santa Claus? And they say sophomore year after we've beaten Florida again. And, you know, it's almost – so much has changed in the aftermath of that initial Christmas commitments video. It's almost easy to forget what the context was like when they initially said that. Remember, they had said that in the immediate aftermath of the 2016 season when Florida unfortunately had beaten Georgia again. It had been three consecutive years of Florida beating Georgia, and heaven only knows how many, years out of however 20 whatever years that Florida had won this series. That was right around the time that the Gatorator countdown first began here on Dog Nation Daily. So LeCount and Fromm saying that then was really significant within the history of when it took place. And here we are two seasons into their college career, and this rivalry has completely flipped. And for those of you that listen and watch every day, you know that I've always been a big believer that – you know, one of the reasons why I put so much significance on the Florida rivalry for Georgia is because when that rivalry flips, the fortunes of the entire program have a chance to change as well. We saw that a year ago with Georgia making the college football playoff. We see it right now with the first rankings coming out last night and Georgia being number six. You get into that rarefied air, that impressive stratosphere because of wins against programs like Florida. It's one of the reasons why I have made such a big deal about that rivalry. And I have fun with these guys having fun with this. In the video back when they were still high school seniors, and you know, in the immediate aftermath of the game on Saturday, I love the tweet from J.J. Holloman where he also referenced the Christmas commitments video. I think we actually have the Holloman tweet here. Holloman says, so Jake Fromm and Richard LeCount, who's a little easy 35 on Twitter, I'm hearing it's something you guys are supposed to tell me in Malik Harry. And he's got the Santa Claus emoji and the Christmas tree emoji. I just think that's really fun. And I think it's really cool that Holloman, after having the game of his life against the Gators, took some time to enjoy that and be a part of that. And it's a good laugh for all of us. But it's not all fun in games either, though, because a lot of what George is doing now, you know, as I said, reigning SEC champions from a year ago in the conversation, do the same thing again here in 2018. You don't get there without the recruiting success that Georgia had in 2017 and the foundation that laid to have even more success in 2018. And we believe that those two classes now lay a foundation to have maybe just as much success here in 2019. You don't get the success on the field without those signing day wins. And the commitment videos make it fun, but the recruiting wins themselves are necessary. Otherwise, Georgia's not playing for championships, and Georgia's not winning in Jacksonville. And it's amazing to me, and frankly, as a Georgia partisan here, it's enjoyable for me to understand that Georgia seems to know that and appreciate that. Kirby Smart seems to lead the way in that regard. And seemingly somehow some of the folks connected to the Florida program still don't get that. They don't get what has made Georgia Georgia over the last two seasons, and they don't get seemingly why Florida is such a far cry from what it was during the Urban Meyer era and the Steve Spurrier era before that. An example of that is a guy that has covered Florida for a long time, Mike Bianchi, the longtime columnist for the Orlando Sentinel. I thought he wrote something in the immediate aftermath of Georgia's 19-point win over Florida on Saturday that is completely laughable, and it ties in perfectly to the conversation we're having here about the Christmas commitment video and Richard LeCount and Jake Fromm and J.J. Holloman and Malik Herring, all these guys who played great against Florida on Saturday, and all these former elite recruits that have populated Georgia's roster and made it much deeper and much more formidable than what Florida has going on. And yet moving forward, it's almost as if folks who either cover Florida or folks within the Florida program are just lost about this. Let me show you a quote here from Mike Bianchi, Orlando Sentinel, on the idea of the Georgia-Florida rivalry maybe being closer than it appeared to be on Saturday. Bianchi writes, "Just the fact that Florida was in a game of this magnitude after last year's debacle of a season is a credit to the job that Dan Mullen has done," Bianchi writes. "Georgia played for the national championship a year ago, and Smart signed the number one recruiting class in the nation. 8 months ago, it appeared the Gators were a zillion light years behind the Dogs, but now it seems like they're only a couple of recruiting classes away." That's Mike Bianchi, the Orlando Sentinel. And I would acknowledge to Mr. Bianchi here that, yeah, Florida's only a couple recruiting classes away from catching up to Georgia. But you make it sound as if it's a birthright for Florida to start recruiting the same way that UGA is and has over the last few years. And if you follow the recruiting wars closely, which obviously here on Dog Nation Daily we do, we don't see very many examples at all of Florida and Georgia going head-to-head for the same player and Florida winning that recruiting battle here. And in fact, some of the key skill position players for Florida's future are guys that, if you'll allow me to be frank here for a moment, are only on the Florida roster because Georgia didn't want them. Now, I'm not going to mention the names because that's not the kind of thing we do around here. We don't really poke fun at players individually all that much. But there are a whole host of Florida players who big time hopes and dreams are pinned on for the future, and they're only there because Georgia just chose other priorities at the same position here. Let's keep that in mind here. And you know, there's just no evidence overall that Florida is on its way to recruiting at the same level that Georgia recruited for its 2017 class and its 2018 class. In fact, you know, Bianchi points out that, hey, Georgia played for the national championship a year ago. But what Bianchi does not mention there is that Georgia also lost 31 players off that team and currently ranks among the youngest teams in all of college football, if not the very youngest. Georgia's actually going to be more deep and more talented, or deeper and more talented in 2019 than they are in 2018, but let's not let facts get in the way of a good opinion if you're Mike Bianchi in the Orlando Sentinel. He was not done here. Let me give you one more quote from Bianchi. He says, "Dogs, enjoy the 19-point victory, Georgia. Cherish it. Embrace it. Appreciate it. With Dan the man in charge, you're no longer going to be dogging the Gators like this for very much longer." That's Mike Bianchi from the Orlando Sentinel. I mean, the whole thing is completely laughable. When Florida starts beating Georgia for recruits, then Georgia will get worried. But look at the 2019 class. Do you see any example of an elite player that Georgia's chasing that Florida's a real threat for here? As long as that's the case, Georgia's not got nothing to worry about. And that Gator Hater Updater that we've been doing here on Dog Nation Daily, it's going to keep going up and up and up. Speaking of that, let's do that right now here. Gator Hater Updater, good news for the Georgia fans. Great news for a reminder here, whether it be Mike Bianchi in the Orlando Sentinel or somebody else, about how much this Georgia-Florida rivalry has changed. It has now been 732 days since Florida has beaten Georgia. 732 days since any UGA fan has had to listen to any trash talk from those lousy, stinking Gators. And my, oh my, is that not a great thing? My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, including the world-famous DogNation.com or the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player. We're just really glad you found Dog Nation Daily here today. And really appreciate you being a part of the program. Appreciate Marco's Pizza making it all possible. Of course, by now you know, as we've said before, Halloween's a night in my family where it's always been pizza. We don't have time to do anything else. And when I'm thinking pizza, I'm thinking Marco's Pizza because it's authentic Italian quality pizza. Every store, every day, the Italian way. And for a great everyday low price of two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. So make everybody in your family happy. The folks who want the best deal, Marco's Pizza provides that. The folks who want real pizza that tastes the way it's supposed to taste, Marco's Pizza gives that to you as well. And with two medium, two topping pizzas, you can also satisfy those picky eaters and the people who want a little bit more variety on their pizza. You can do it all there with a Marco's. So check them out online at Marco's.com. I've got my buddy Mike Griffith coming up here in just a moment. Before we do that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today on Wednesday, presented to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I told you that if you would let me do some fun stuff on the heels of the Christmas commitment video off the top of the show, I'd get serious with some real football talk beyond that. So let's do that right now here. I think there's a big issue that Georgia is still dealing with heading towards Kentucky on Saturday. The rush defense, no doubt, has to improve. And, you know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. Y'all know the way that I feel about everything. You've probably heard me say or allude to over and over that I'm looking for a Jordan Davis in the linebacking corps. The way that Davis has emerged as a defensive lineman here, a freshman of note here for Georgia the last few weeks, I'm hoping that one of those freshmen, like maybe Channing Tindall or maybe Quay Walker, emerges as that guy for the linebacking corps here during the month of November. Although it's fair to point out that just might not happen. Let me give you a couple of examples of why this continues to be a big issue. First of all, I asked Jeff Sintel about this very topic yesterday, and I thought that Jeff gave an interesting answer about why obviously it's something that Georgia fans hope for, but it may not necessarily be a guarantee or a likelihood of happening just because of the nature of and the challenge of playing the linebacker position as a freshman. Let me let you hear a little bit from Jeff yesterday because I think he sets us up well for where we need to go next.
I know the number one topic is probably for Georgia fans, Dog Nation, and even Kirby Smart right now is how you fix that leaky run defense. And I think the main thing there is basically the way that inside linebackers get off blocks and how they make tackles in space. Kirby Smart even referenced it in his post-game comments. When Georgia has two guys and they have outside leverage on the back, they should be able to win that battle. I got a couple things. Number one, I would like to see Georgia see what they can do with Kay Crowder and Monty Rice maybe as the primary inside linebackers. I think that might be the best mix for success over the next two or three weeks, the remaining portion of the SEC schedule. But I know everybody wants to look at the 2018 guys, and there are some talents there. I personally think if you don't see Tindall and Walker have greater roles in this defense over the next 2 weeks, I don't know if they will be ready to make significant contributions.
That's not the opinion I want from Jeff Sintel, but it may be a realistic opinion from Jeff. He would go on to talk about how if guys are going to pop the rest of the season, it may actually be 2017 signees, like we saw from J.J. Holland on the offensive side of the ball, more so than one of those 2018 signees, just because those guys have been in the program longer. That same dose of realism was not only given to us by Jeff Sintel this week, it was also given to us by Georgia coach Kirby Smart as well, who for the most part says that the guys who have been playing are the guys that Georgia's going to keep playing here the rest of the way, and stopping the run is going to require the guys who've been on the field to a certain degree to get better. Here is, as I said, a dose of realism from Georgia coach Kirby Smart.
It's tough in the midst of a season to just magically get better. We try to do it through fundamentals, technique, individual block destruction, demeanor, attitude, but you can't go out and replace players. We got what we got. We'd love to have some more depth at those positions, but we don't. And we've got to do a better job of helping the guys we got to be successful, whether that be by scheme or that be by effort or fundamentals. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to block protect and you got to tackle. It's hard to say, well, we're going to just change all that in 1 week and get better.
Smart would go on to say, though, they are going to keep working to get better, working to improve, and he laid it out exactly how Georgia plans on doing just that.
We're just going to keep working at it. That's all we know how to do, and there are no magical defenses that we can call that say this defense stops every run. It's not. You got to physically whip a man in front of you, get off a block, and go make the tackle, of which they do a really good job of blocking you. And they got one of the premier guys in the country toting the ball, who's probably the best I've ever seen with his vision. I mean, he never misses a hole. He sets his blockers up, and he does not want to be tackled. You got to go in with a willingness to be more physical than him. So it's not going to be easy. We got to do a good job of playing with a little better demeanor.
So I think it's really interesting, Kirby Smart. You know, if you want to read between the lines there, what he's saying is Georgia fans, BA, don't expect Channing Tindall and Quay Walker to come swooping in and save the day as freshmen the way that Jordan Davis seemingly has for the defensive line. This is still a position where experience matters, and apparently Kirby's going to lean on the guys that have the experience. And against Kentucky on Saturday, the challenge of stopping the run is made even more significant because of the kind of season that Benny Snell has had. Really interesting stuff as we go around the doghouse. Presented on this Wednesday by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know what they do by now. They provide foundation repair, basement waterproofing, crawlspace encapsulation, and they offer a lifetime of support. So give them a call right now at 678-ESOG now. That number once again, 678-ESOG now. You can have one of their qualified professional technicians come out to your home to check your cracked foundation or your wet basement or your damp crawl space. It's all available for you there because they're the only foundation repair company with a full-time engineer on staff. We appreciate Engineered Solutions of Georgia bringing us around the doghouse. We also appreciate Mike Griffith being here on Dog Nation Daily here today as well for plenty more on Georgia, what it did against Florida, what it needs to do against Kentucky. Let's talk to Mike right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Mike Griffith. Boy, great coverage from him coming off the trip to Jacksonville on Saturday. He was all over the place, both there on Friday after the game and even back in Athens in the immediate aftermath of that. And, of course, he's looking forward, I'm sure, to being in Lexington on Saturday, providing more of the same kind of coverage. Mike, we appreciate you being on our program today, and we hope that you are doing very well, sir.
Oh, doing great, BA. Thanks.
I'm glad to have you on the program. I thought it was kind of funny. Y'all, the reporters, the contingent there in Athens, were with Kirby Smart, you know, just shortly after we all found out that Georgia was ranked number 6 last night by the College Football Playoff Selection Rankings, the committee, and it seemed like Kirby Smart didn't have a whole lot of concern about that one way or another. And I guess this is probably all based on what we'd all agree on. For Georgia, maybe more so than any other team, the rankings are completely inconsequential. They could be ranked number 1 now. They could be ranked number 25 now. They just need to win their games. And if Georgia does win its games, it's going to be in great shape for the postseason. Is that kind of your thinking on this, and probably Smart's thinking as well, that beating the teams on your schedule, including what will likely be a very impressive SEC championship matchup, that's way more important than whatever number is next to Georgia's name right now?
Yeah, that was Kirby's message. And, you know, he kind of had a warning. You said you get caught up in it and you go down pretty quick. And I think Georgia learned their lesson last year. I mean, you know, hey, they were number 1 last year, right? And, you know, they ended up losing to Auburn. And, you know, Kirby's big on focus. You know, I thought it was interesting that, you know, the first thing he was like, oh, man, I forgot to talk to the players about that. You know, he wanted to make sure his players knew. I mean, it just goes to show you the extent that Kirby goes to in creating and setting a team mindset. And that's one of the things that he's done here that's made this a special program. I mean, it's not just because Sanford Stadium is a great game day environment. It's not just because the school's ranked 13th among public schools or because there's a good tradition here or because Kirby is a former player, a championship coach at Alabama. It's about what he has created here with the mindset and the personality of this team that reflects Kirby Smart. And, you know, it was just more evidence last night, you know, that he was disappointed that he'd overlooked, you know, preparing the freshman players. The other guys, they heard it all last year. You know, they heard last year how to prepare for it, and they learned firsthand, hey, it doesn't really matter. You know, reflecting back on Georgia being number 1, it didn't mean anything, and it doesn't mean that they're number 6 now. The people, I think, to your point, who it probably matters to would be someone like UCF that's trying to get positioned for a number 4 spot if they were to win all their games. But if you're in the SEC, heck, even if you're Kentucky, you know, you win out, you're in.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Mike. As far as what happened on the field on Saturday against Florida, I thought one of the most significant potential storylines, and it'll have to, you know, take more shape and develop more in the future, But one of the most potentially interesting storylines was the emergence of J.J. Holloman, who's been on the field a lot and already had some big catches for Georgia this season, but caught two touchdowns on Saturday against Florida. And, you know, Mike, I'm a big believer, and you and I have talked about this before, that on a talented roster over the course of a season, things can change. Guys can emerge, in other words, over the course of September and October, heading towards November. I'm not so sure that the same thing might not be happening with Holloman here, because he's got all the specs that you want from a wide receiver. He runs, he's big, he showed strength with the way he pulled the ball out of the air on at least one of those touchdowns on Saturday. That's still a pretty crowded position group, but also that top guy is still up for grabs, and I think that Holloman certainly threw his name into the ring for consideration to maybe be that guy here. What did you make of what Holloman did on Saturday?
Yeah, no doubt, B.A., not just the two touchdowns, but a really big third down grab on that drive where they really put it away and the Terry Godwin catch. And yeah, I would agree. Holloman is an emerging star. You know, he flashed earlier this year against Middle Tennessee. But, you know, as Kirby explained to us, you know, a lot of times it's not a matter of we're trying to throw the ball to Holloman. It's a matter of where is the read and where does the ball, you know, where does the what hash mark is the ball on and where does Jake Fromm's reads take him? And but the fact that he's out there in that situation tells you everything, especially now that he's a starter. And, you know, another guy starting his first game, Jordan Davis, a guy that I know you've been high on for a while, and the freshman nose guard. So some of those younger players starting to emerge, and all that does is amp things up in practice. Those veterans, they're going to fight back. They're going to turn up their performance level. But a very big win and a very different mindset and feeling in Athens this week. A lot of pressure off of this team. You can just feel it, you can see it, you can hear it in their voices, just how big that Florida win was after 2 weeks sitting on that loss at LSU.
Well, let me follow up on that real quickly, because you mentioned Jordan Davis, and he seems to emerge as a defensive lineman. Maybe Holloman's doing as a wide receiver, but not all of these predictions, I guess, end up, you know, coming true. I was talking about the linebackers before you joined us and how I've also been hopeful that one of those freshmen would eventually step in there and step up and help that group get better. And, you know, based on what Kirby Smart said this week and some of the other conversations we've had on our program, maybe that may still be too much too soon for those guys like Tindall and Walker and some of those freshmen, that if you're looking for a savior to come swooping in for that group, you know, you may not quite get that. So while I'm always about guys improving over the course of the season and making November contributions, it may not happen for George at every position, right?
No, probably not. You know, Tate Crowder may be the most likely person to step in. You know, Natrez Patrick, you know, Kirby kind of defended him. He said, hey, he's been up and down and he's missed tackles. But Kirby really likes the way he leads in practice, and he really likes how, the, you know, his vocal nature and how he makes sure everybody else is given 100%. And while Natrez did not have a good game against Florida, I think we all saw some glaring missed tackles that were costly. Kirby standing behind him, likes his leadership. I think Natrez will continue to play snaps, but Tate Crowder was sent out to talk to the media last night, probably for a reason. And the most encouraging thing I heard about that position, B.A., is Kirby said he felt like Monty Rice is just about over the knee injury. He's been playing with a knee injury, a sprained knee, and he feels like Monty is starting to look like Monty again. And the other injury I would play, the other player coming off the injury, and I know we're jumping around a little bit, but you know, Georgia is getting healthier, and this is important. That bye week was important, was DeAndre Swift.
Yeah.
And he looked like the guy that I thought he would be, and he brought that explosive element back to the run game that's been sorely missing against SEC competition.
I want to get another update from you on an injury here in a moment. Before we do that, though, you know, one of the things that I think Georgia grads are very proud of is that in a lot of ways, UGA is really considered to be the birthplace of higher education, but maybe not everybody's familiar with the story about how it all came to be. Have you ever heard this story before, that only 30 years old, Abraham Baldwin crafted one of the most groundbreaking documents in our nation's early history? It was the charter that established the University of Georgia as the birthplace of a higher education in America, and it was written all the way back in 1785. The establishment of UGA launched a great tradition of world-class public higher education, creating tens of millions of informed citizens, scientists, and entrepreneurs. Well, today, UGA remains committed to academic excellence and continues to lead the way for public education innovation. Research from our university has also improved the lives and impacted communities all across the world. But in order to do more of that, you are required. If you're proud of the degree that you have in the University of Georgia, and if you're proud of the impact that your school is making around the world and has been making all the way back since 1785. One of the great ways for you to show that is get involved by going to this website, give.uga.edu. You can find out how you can get involved in UGA's mission of creating a truly world-class public education facility by going to give.uga.edu. All right, Mike, you mentioned entries. Let's talk about Ben Cleveland here for a moment, because as kind of happens sometimes in this social media age, it seems like we're getting some conflicting opinions, both in terms of Cleveland, who says, I believe it was on the fuel of Copenhagen and a Red Bull, that he's going to be back playing against Kentucky. Kirby Smart has pumped the brakes on that a little bit and saying, let's wait and see how all this goes. What do you make of Cleveland's potential return here? Georgia desperately needs him. Do you think it happens on Saturday against the Wildcats?
Yeah, I think we'll see some Ben Cleveland. And, you know, Kirby said he's not sure he's going to start, but it sounds like Ben's eager to get back. And he's been going through practice this week. You know, he's had some soreness. But, I think that would be a big boost. Matter of fact, I'm doing a story on Ben right now. So that's my thought, is we probably will see him. I just don't know how much.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice you used a very interesting word there in your answer. You used the word some. So you think it's a partially healthy Cleveland playing part of the time, maybe more likely than the big guy swooping back in there as a starter and just mauling people from the word go. It sounds like, at least from a Georgia fan's perspective, you are tempering your optimism just a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, the last thing you want to do is bring him back too early and then he gets hurt again. I mean, that's, you got to be careful with these things. And, these young men, I mean, they want to play. And obviously Ben is a competitor and Saturday's game is very important. But if you start Cade Mays and it's 17-0 at the end of the first quarter, and Ben's 85%, do you bring him in, right? So
right.
I think you have to look at the situation and see just where you're at. I'm not sure, as far as Kentucky goes, and there is something to be said, Brandon, for teams that find a way to win, but I'm just not sure that I'm convinced Kentucky is going to pose that great of a challenge, for Georgia. Now, look, it's football. It's tough. I'm not saying this is going to be Middle Tennessee State or Austin Peay, but, Georgia just finished playing LSU in Florida. And I know that Kentucky beat Florida earlier this year, but, Kentucky also had 3 points halfway through the fourth quarter against Missouri.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really fair point, Mike. I mean, obviously, there are some questions about just how good this team really is, and obviously the Wildcats out of this hoping to answer those on Saturday, but I don't think your suspicions are necessarily unfounded when it comes to that. Let me talk about quarterbacks here just for a moment, because I think for the most part, Jake Fromm is being celebrated as really having a nice bounce back versus Florida compared to what was obviously, I think even Fromm would admit, not a very good game against LSU. How impressed were you with the way that Fromm was able to put the criticism at bay, was able to return his focus to where it needs to be, and really came out and made some big throws for Georgia on Saturday? What did you think of the, I guess moxie's the right word, what did you think of the moxie that Fromm showed on Saturday?
Well, I mean, I thought Jake was steady and poised, but I thought that everybody was. I thought the receivers ran the right route, because they didn't at LSU. I thought the offensive line protected adequately. They didn't at LSU. I thought the coaches had a good game plan, and I don't think the game plan was great at LSU. So just as I didn't think Jake deserved all the blame at LSU, he was the first one to say when we talked to him after the game, hey, we said, man, what was it, Jake? How'd you do? He said, man, the receivers were great today. The line was great today. We called some good plays. I mean, Jake was being Jake. Now, he did miss the throw against Mecole Hardman at LSU, and that was a glaring mistake. But there were a lot of things that went wrong at LSU that were not Jake Fromm, and it wouldn't have mattered who was playing quarterback. Conversely, there were a lot of things that went right at Florida, and it wasn't just Jake Fromm. It was J.J. Holloman emerging and making some really great catches, and Godwin running a really good route for that 24-yard touchdown, and Jim Cheney just dialing it up, man. And, he's taking so much heat, because he has to put an offensive game plan together under the parameters that Kirby gives him, and he really called a great game. That third down conversion rate was, so it was a lot of things. But, yeah, the fact that Jake didn't fall apart, the fact that Jake didn't curl up in some fetal position and cry when so many fans wanted him benched, he competed. And Kirby told us that. Kirby told us during the week, hey, Jake's a competitor. He had a great bye week. He was very confident. Tim Tebow told us Friday he expected Jake Fromm to bounce back. It was Tebow that said that. Pollock was saying we're going to see more fields than ever. It was curious to hear Tebow being the one to champion. Well, Tebow and Herbstreit were championing Jake Fromm, and Pollock was the one saying, hey, get this other guy in there. So everybody had their opinions on it. I thought Jake played tremendous. And to be fair to Pollock, I think there was a place where Justin Fields should have been used.
Yeah, and I guess let me go there while we still have a little bit of time left, because I know you wrote about this at adognation.com this week. You know, it does seem like an obvious spot down near the goal line. You know, Justin Fields is so dynamic with his legs. I believe he's a good thrower, too, and I think eventually he's going to show that in a Georgia uniform. But as of now, he is at least very dynamic with his legs. You know, he's played every game this season. He's up until the Florida game. He's, you know, mostly been a running quarterback. You know, I'll tee you up for this one, Mike. Why not let him be a running quarterback down near the goal line right there?
Yeah, I don't know, because they did it in Missouri. You know, he came in on a first to goal from seven and gained 3 yards, albeit not his best running effort. I seem to remember he didn't put a shoulder down. It was kind of an awkward kind of scramble. But, you know, I don't know what's going on in practice. And I don't know what the conversations are. I do know that at the start of the year, Georgia was very, very careful to say Justin Fields is not a package quarterback.
Yeah.
He's running the same plays as Jake Fromm. He's running the same offense. And I know when Jordan Rodgers spoke with the staff before the LSU game and I visited with Jordan, he said, boy, Kirby really made sure to make it clear that, you know, Fields wasn't going to be a package guy. So I don't know what's going on. I know that in this day and age, everybody worries about titles and tags and what's said on social media. But I really like something Tebow said. When I asked him about the role he played as a freshman at Florida, when Chris Leak was the starter, and that team won a national championship, by the way, and I said to Tebow, I said, did it ever bother you that you were a package quarterback your freshman year? He said, no. He said, I just wanted to get on the field. I just wanted to help my team, and I wanted to, you know, impose my will on opponents, and I wanted to play so good in those opportunities that Urban Meyer would want to put me out there again and again. And he said, I think Justin Fields probably feels the same way. Now, I don't know, because we can't talk to Justin Fields, and Kirby, while he addresses the quarterback situation, he doesn't get into all of the finer details about what maybe Justin was told during recruiting or what his father may think at the time. I don't know. But when you've got a guy with that skill set that looks a lot like Cam Newton to me, you put him in the red zone, B.A., because he is a threat to pass, just like Tebow was. And he is a threat to run, just like Tebow was. He would be really tough to stop if you put him in the shotgun and rolled him out. That would put so much pressure on defenses.
I think that's really interesting, Mike. We really appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I know you've got a lot of great stuff coming up at the website heading towards the Kentucky game on Saturday. It is the crunch time of the year. We want good reporting when you're heading towards these big games, and you're just the guy to provide that. So thank you so much for being on the program here today, and we will look forward to talking to you very soon.
Thanks, BA. Have a good one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I think it's interesting, a lot of what Mike Griffith had to say there. Let me take a couple of those things before we move on to our SEC Through here. First of all, on the subject of Ben Cleveland, I mean, y'all, it's hard not to get really, really excited about the potential of a Cleveland return. And I think that Mike's right. You got to be careful about doing too much too soon. And maybe it is a deal where you see, okay, how much do we need this guy against Kentucky? Now, before it's all said and done, you know, to get the win that Georgia fans want to get, maybe you do need that in the immediate aftermath of that. But, you know, when Cleveland comes back, if you think about him being your right guard, and now all of a sudden the door is open for a Cade Mays to play left guard, y'all, that's fun. That's really fun stuff, especially with Gilliard in the center. And, of course, you know the situation with the tackles, assuming that Andrew Thomas is healthy. But that interior, that offensive line, those are some bad dudes now. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, on Monday, I didn't make too big of a deal about, you know, Florida choking or eye gouging or that one picture that I got showed that was, I don't even know how to describe that. It was so profane. But, you know, whatever that stuff is down the pile, I'm not going to make too big of a deal about that, because Are we going to sit here and pretend that Cade Mays and Vinny Cleveland are doing some of the same kind of stuff, or even worse? Heaven only knows what those guys are doing in one of those short yardage situations. And, you know, you hate it when it's somebody else's team. You like it when it's your team. And so, you know, Georgia's got to get those maulers back. You know, get a mauler like Cleveland back. Get a big guy like Andrew Thomas fully healthy once again. That Georgia offensive line and that power running game going to look a lot different when it's at full strength at offensive line. So Ben Cleveland may be a help on the way situation here, fueled by Red Bull and Copenhagen. I don't know that I endorse either of those personal choices, but nonetheless, I guess you do you, Mr. Cleveland, on that. The other thing is, it's obviously an interesting storyline still with the quarterbacks. I think that I think that Georgia is very, very good to have Jake Fromm playing the way that he played on Saturday, and still very good to have the option of using Justin Fields in intriguing scenarios. He's not a package quarterback. He's not a wildcat quarterback. He's so much more than that. But that doesn't mean that there aren't opportunities that you can use him, even if Jake Fromm is the starter for right now. And I think that Mike Griffin's got some pretty interesting opinions on that. As we move on here and get ready to do our SEC through, let me also remind you to check out my friends at MyBookie. Of course, you know that they are the only sportsbook we would recommend here around Dog Nation. But what you might not know, though, is when it comes to MyBookie, it is not just the college football stuff you can bet on. Now, you can do that, not just the wins and losses, but the parlays. You can bet a little to win a lot. But here's something else to keep in mind. What is it? A week from yesterday, the college basketball season begins. You got four huge college basketball games. Now, I would suggest that in some cases, college basketball may actually be a little easier to bet on than college football, just because there's so many more teams and the lines may not be quite as well manicured, if you get my drift there on that. So think about MyBookie for the college basketball season, and don't forget that when you use the promo code DOGNATION, all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, DAWG, your first deposit can be matched up to 50%, but you got to go right now. Find MyBookie online. That's MyBookie. Then play with the pros play at MyBookie by using the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched 50%. Then after that, you play. You win. You get paid. But you need to use the promo code DOGNATION there at MyBookie. All right, last night, the first college football playoff top 25 of the year came out. And yes, I know these things don't matter at all. I do get that. But I still enjoy it. I still like the debate that comes off of it. And I got to say, I love seeing Georgia right in the middle of all of this here once again for 2018. The top 10 comes out last night. You got Ohio State at 10. Georgia's opponent for Saturday, Kentucky at 9. Kind of weird to see Wazoo at 8. There's no way that'll last, but they're there for right now. Gardner Minshew, by the way, almost went to Alabama as a transfer quarterback from East Carolina. Has had a great year. It's Oklahoma just below Georgia at 6. And then it's the top 5 of Michigan, Notre Dame, LSU, Clemson, Alabama. Interesting to beat the Marlows in Brookhaven last night and hear the a little bit of a gasp that goes out when it was LSU that was ahead of Notre Dame. The fact of the matter is, you know, Notre Dame has a pretty impressive schedule. They did beat Michigan, which is among the most impressive wins of the season. LSU also beat Georgia. That's an impressive win here as well. LSU's got the non-conference win at Miami to start the year. You know, so LSU has worked on its resume a bit here. It's got the win over Mississippi State there as well. So LSU gets the nod here as of the moment. It's really interesting to think, though, that with LSU and Alabama playing on Saturday, that's 1-3. Georgia playing Kentucky, that's 6-9. The SEC status as that premier conference in college football, it seems to once again completely been reestablished here, because it's almost, and some people joked about this last night at Marlowe's, it's like that SEC Final Four here this weekend, where you've got those four SEC teams all potentially playing for spots in the SEC championship. I say potentially because if LSU wins, it doesn't necessarily salt up the and lock away the West as of yet, but Alabama could, and Kentucky definitely will. So it's an interesting time for the SEC to see those four teams ranked in the top 10 with a chance to really put themselves in a nice postseason position. We'll make that your SEC through. And by the way, speaking of Marlowe's at Brookhaven last night, thank you all for coming out and being a part of what was a great event for us. I just thought that was a terrific, fun time. It was great to have the former Georgia offensive lineman, great former player, terrific analyst now, a guy that's just got a sharp football mind. I thought some of the things that John Stinchcomb said last night from a breakdown the game football standpoint were just really, really outstanding. And for those of you that were not able to either be with us there at Marlowe's, or maybe you missed our broadcast last night, I wanted to give you a little taste of what John had to say. First of all, on the heels of the top 10 being announced and the positioning of those SEC teams. I thought John had kind of an interesting take on that when it comes to Kentucky, Georgia, Alabama, LSU all being the top 10. Here's John Stinchcomb from Marlowe's last night.
I think it shows the level of respect that the committee has for the SEC West and the season that they have to play. It sets up this weekend to be a huge weekend of football. Obviously, the top four, the final four in the SEC this weekend. But it's not going to matter. Come this time next week, we'll have plenty of answers. And it goes down to the Alabama-LSU game.
So the realistic, practical assessment is these rankings, as John says, they kind of don't matter. But on shows like this one, one of the reasons why they do matter for many of the people who are listening and watching is because there is a debate that leads up to the start of this debate. And the debate about Georgia has been, well, who's Georgia played? And we've kind of taken some shots at some of the people who've taken some shots at Georgia's schedule here over the last few weeks. And all of a sudden, that doesn't quite feel as relevant of a conversation, right? I mean, you've got Georgia that just beat Florida, which was ranked 9th in the AP poll last week, ranked 11th in the playoff poll here this week. Georgia's playing Kentucky right now, who's ranked at number 9 in the playoff ranking. So, you know, Georgia's going to win and be in when it comes to college football playoff. But I think also when you see how the Georgia schedule is taking shape here, heading towards these pivotal games, it's also, with a win, going to leave no doubt about its status, because once again the SEC seemingly standing, as as John Stinchcomb points out, standing head and shoulders above the rest of these conferences in college football. That's pretty interesting. Also, John was very impressed, like many of us all were, with how Georgia performed against Florida, what it meant for the Dogs bouncing back from LSU, and what it could mean heading towards Kentucky on Saturday. Here's a little bit more from John Stinchcomb on that.
Well, for me, coming out of the LSU game, the questions resided on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, much has been made about replacing Roquan and the defensive front, and the box is different. You got a true freshman starting at cornerback, but that wasn't my concern at the end of LSU. To me, it was high-profile playmakers on offense. Where were they? Where were they against LSU? You've got these great wide receivers that are huge and can run, and D-Rob can't even make it on the field because we have so many guys in front of him, and they seem to, I don't know if disappear is the right word, but in the second half of LSU, you had to leave with more questions about the offense of, are we really high profile? Are we really able to press and create plays? You go into Florida, the defense is creating turnovers left and right.
Yeah.
So they definitely put their stamp on that game. And offensively, you come away with 36 points and got back to your true identity, which is ground and pound first and foremost.
So I think that what John Stinchcomb says there is really interesting, and it's one of the reasons why when Dog Nation's at Marlowe's, you want to be out and be a part of it, because great former Georgia players like that come and share their insight, and some of the stuff that John said on the broadcast, a lot of the things that he said in the off-air Q&A were even more interesting than that. But his assessment of the Florida situation heading towards Kentucky, Georgia beating Florida, now getting ready to play the Wildcats, I think is spot on. And for the most part, I think we would all agree that there's no way right now the Georgia defense is going to be as good as the defense was a year ago. It's just practically impossible. There is no Roquan Smith, and it's impossible to replace Roquan with what's available right now. That's no shot at anybody playing for Georgia right now. Just Roquan Smith was the Buckus Award winner. Same thing for NFL guys like Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, and a veteran group like John Atkins that are just not there anymore. So I think we would all then say, well, if Georgia's not going to be quite as good as it was defensively, but if it still wants to be an SEC championship contender, if it still wants to be a playoff contender, it's got to be even better on offense. And for Georgia to do that, that means identifying who these true playmakers are. For many fans, it's somewhat comforting to know that as confusing as the LSU loss was and the performance there was to many of us, apparently it was just as confusing to a guy like John who truly knows football. But against Florida, some of that confusion goes away. All of a sudden, the identity of the Georgia offense starts to take shape. And against Kentucky on Saturday, I think it may further cement itself as one of the reasons why Georgia has a chance to stay in the thick of this playoff race for weeks and weeks to come. All right, so we will wrap up on today's program, and let me remind you one more time as we do that I love the, if you're watching a video, you can see this on the screen right now. Three words matter this week more than any other. And as we turn towards Kentucky fully here on Thursday and Friday on our show, you're going to hear me say these a lot. In fact, I've got a visual aid to help me right now. Those three words to them that matter more than any other, you can say it with me in your car, if you're listening to the podcast, the radio, it's own the East. I don't take that for granted. You know, we talked to John Stinchcomb about this yesterday on the show and last night at Marlowe's. I remember the first time Georgia won the division, way back in 2002. The SEC championship had been in place for a lot of years. It just seemed like that door was locked to Georgia. It was a ceiling that Georgia couldn't burst its way through. And then in 2002 it happened. It's happened many years since then. But they're all precious. A chance to do that again on Saturday is going to be a lot of fun. Who knows what happens come December when Georgia gets that Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Y'all have a great day. Happy Halloween. We'll see you tomorrow.